call it laughing stock.
Well, you know what, Gary, if we are able to determine what that is, if you want, you could send me an email, dave@davetherave.com, and if we get an answer for you on that, we'll certainly pass it along to you. I don't want to have Charlie looking through his discographies there for that one song.
I don't have that in my archives of stuff.
You don't recall that song then, Charlie?
No, I may not have done it.
Uh-huh, okay.
Any other questions, Gary?
Yeah, that's about it. All I can tell you is that song is, I've never heard it on the radio, and on Dave's show, I haven't heard it either, but if you can play it, if you can get your hands on it.
We'll be on the lookout for it. Gary, thank you so much for calling, okay?
All right. Nice talking to you guys.
All right, take care now.
Bye now.
There ain't no good in our goodbye. True love takes a lot of trying. Oh, I'm crying.
Of course, is the Four Seasons there. Let's hang on! We're hanging on the phone line here. We've got Charlie hanging on. Charlie Colello has been my guest. Of course, he was an arranger, producer, writer. He was a Four Season, and one time he was a Victorian in the very, very beginning. And to my knowledge, Charlie, that's it for the performing, right? The Victorians, the Four Seasons, and I'm not aware of any other groups that you performed in as an artist.
No, that's pretty much it.
You realized your niche was as a, and that, of course, you said was your dream. Which I was surprised about that. I guess everybody, you know, you think that everybody wants to be up on the stage as a performer. What was that like, by the way? I mean, did you get any of the bug when you were a Four Season for like that year or so? Did you start like rethinking, well, gee, do I want to be an arranger or do I want to be a performer?
I couldn't wait to get back in the studio. In fact, how I became a Four Season was really, you know, it's really a funny story.
Well, I've got time if you've got the time.
Because I really had no interest in wanting to go back on the road. In fact, the night I got called to go and replace Nikki, I had just finished making the tracks to the record Lightning Strikes. And I did it on a Friday night. I went home and there was a phone call from Tommy. And he said, Charlie, there's going to be a car that's going to pick you up tomorrow at 9 o'clock. You better be there. And then he called me, and I said, this was a message on my machine. And I said, Tommy, I said, you know, I have to be back in New York. I have singers booked Monday to finish this record working on with Lou Christie. He says, well, you'll take a plane home. He says, but we got concerts that we have to do. So, I don't remember if it was Monday or Tuesday. I really don't remember. A limousine pulled me to Pennsylvania from Austin Union, New Jersey, and out and saw the last performance by the original Four Seasons. And I didn't even own a bass at that point. I was playing. I played Fender bass with the band. And when I went out on the road. I had worked with them since 1959, and this was around 1965.
So there had been like the six-year lapse.
Right,
and actually, when you worked with them, it wasn't the Four Seasons; it was the Four Lovers.
Right, and the only why they wanted me to come and replace Nikki was because I knew all the songs because I had worked with them. So I sort of drafted because I was, I was the guy who was available, but when we performed the first night, I had never performed the hit record, and we rehearsed in a limousine going from Pennsylvania to Ohio. When we got out to Ohio, we did a show for 10,000 people, and I went out and did the show, and it was at that point it was only the four of us and a drummer. I went out and did the whole show and sang all the parts. And, you know, most of the parts I knew anyway because, you know, I had recorded them. But what was the interesting part about it was that that here I was on the road singing in a band that I didn't really want to be with.
I was not to mention the fact that the band was, you know, they were like superstars at the time. People would have killed to be in that band.
Well, this particular story is in the show The Jersey Boys, because the first job that we played is the one in Jersey Boys that you actually see where they get arrested. But Nikki wasn't in the band at that point; he had already left. I was the bass player, and they didn't arrest me because I wasn't Nick Massey. But that was the first job that we played. So the first concert that I did with them. They walked off the stage and the police arrested Tommy, Bobby, and Frankie and took them to jail.
And they arrested him for...
In fact, it was funny because they had the paddy wagon sitting right off stage. And this was a 10,000-seat racetrack, and it was outdoors. So you actually saw it. It was actually funny to see the police actually take these guys and put them right in the paddy wagon.
What was the reason they were arrested for again?
They had a manager who didn't pay a phone bill, a hotel bill, from about, you know, a couple of years prior to that. And he was given the money to pay the bills, and what he did was he walked away and put the money in his pocket. And they got stuck. They actually got stuck. Being on a road now with, you know, and they went to jail for not paying a bill, and at that point it was really a serious offense.
And you were the only one left to bail them out, huh?
Yeah, in fact, it was really funny. In the in the, when we were talking earlier about some of the things that were a little disjointed, that was one of the things. You know, when I saw it, that didn't really happen the way they did.
What year was it now that, you know, you remember, what year was it when you actually joined the Four Seasons on the road?
It must have been the summer of 1965.
Summer of 65. And why did Nick Massey leave at that time?
Truth?
Yes.
What he told me was because Frankie was stealing his broads.
Was his broad Bernadette Carroll?
Oh, I don't remember.
Do you remember Bernadette Carroll?
Yeah, Bernadette from the what's the name of the group?
The Angels?
Actually, Bernadette sang on my Lou Christie hits.
That's correct, by the way. I do recall that. I was going to bring that up. I just saw her recently. I emceed a show with a girl group from the 60s called the Goodies and Little Anthony and the Imperials and Maxine Brown. And we found out that Bernadette wanted to come to the show, so we brought her down, invited her as a guest, and had her take a bow. But the reason I said that is that I know that Nick Massey did some writing for her on a song called Nikki. He produced it, he wrote it, and it was called Nikki. So I just figured that maybe the two of them were an item at the time.
No, I think Bernadette, I think was, you know, had a thing for somebody else. I don't remember.
She was a very pretty girl.
Yeah.
Listen, we have a phone caller on the phone line. I believe, excuse me, I believe it's Joe from somewhere in Arizona. Joe, are you there? Joe, are you you're live with Dave the Raven, Charlie Colalo on Relics and Rarities. Joe, are you there? Maybe we've lost Joe. He was there a minute ago. Joe, if you're out there, please call back. 732-866-4475 is our phone number. 732-866-4475. And Joe, if we've lost you, we do apologize. Charlie Colalo is my guest. And of course, he was the arranger and conductor. And as you heard, he spent a year on the road with the Four Seasons. And, I guess it was, what, 65 then that you worked with Lou Christie on Lightning Strikes?
Yeah.
And it did strike. So let's take a listen to Lou Christie and Lightning Strikes.
Listen to me, baby, you gotta understand. You're old enough to know the makings of a man. Listen to me, baby, it's hard to settle down. Am I asking too much for you to stick around? Every boy wants a girl he can trust to the very end. Baby, that's you, won't you wait? But till then, when I see lips begging to be kissed, stop. I can't stop.
No, I can't stop. I love lightning striking again. Lightning striking again.
Nature's taken over my track mine. Believe it or not, you're in my heart all the time. All the girls are saying that you'll end up a fool. For the time being, baby, live by my rules. When I settle down, I want one baby on my mind. Forgive and forget, and I'll make up for all lost time. If she's put together by, can she see my
again and again and again and again.
Lightning Strike from Lou Christie. Well, you did well with that one, Charlie, didn't you?
That was the second record that I produced that was a hit.
What was the first?
The Name Game.
Okay, which we were just about to play a second ago. Had that one queued up, and then when you mentioned Lou Christie's Lightning Strikes, we switched over to the Lou Christie record. But not bad, right? Two for two.
The Lou Christie record, I had recorded Lou when he was on Cold Picks, and he played me Lightning Strikes.
Let me just stop you for one second. Let me be rude. I got to tell you that the record you did with him on Cold Picks is one of my all-time favorite Lou Christie songs. You talk about the song Big Time.
Yeah.
I love that record. In fact, I remember playing it on right around Lou Christie's birthday. Lou called actually and wished me a happy birthday, and we played Big Time, and it was a great record. When we talk about a record that should have been a hit, Charlie, that's the record I'm talking about. That's a good example of what should have been a hit, Big Time on Cold Picks.
I thought that record should have been a hit too.
You know, see that's dangerous when we think alike.
The song Lightning Strikes he had written about the same time, and I didn't like the song, and I had him rewrite it.
What was what didn't you like about it? You know. Let me give an example. You mentioned that Dawn was a folk song, so give us some idea what Lightning Strikes was like and what you didn't like about it.
The chorus was great. He didn't have the verses to where the verses had any kind of a story, and the song didn't tie together well. And I told him to rewrite it, and I gave him some suggestions, brought it back, and I it wasn't really right. And the third time he played it for me, I said, "This is it. This is the."
Did you end up getting a co-writing credit?
No. As a producer, whenever you work with an artist, part of your job is to
do what you did.
Is to do what I did, and if the song isn't right, I did that on another hit for another writer, Deborah Allen. Many years later, I had a hit record with her called "Baby I Lied." And
what label was that on?
RCA.
And this was a a top 40 hit record.
It was the number one country record, and it was a top 20 pop record.
Okay. I mean, pop meaning like at the time, Billboard would have out those like middle of the road charts.
Top 100 hits.
Right. We have on the phone line, and we do apologize to the gentleman from Arizona. Apparently, we did cut him off, but he's on hold. We have somebody who snuck in before him, and I think he said your name is Albo, correct?
That is correct.
And where are you calling from?
I'm from Milwaukee, Dave.
Well, please say hello to Charlie Colella, my guest on Relics and Rarities tonight.
How you doing, Albo?
I'm doing just fine, Charlie. First of all, I wanted to say thank you for being a big part of the soundtrack of my life. I'm looking at your website tonight, and you have your top 100, Billboard Magazine top 100.
Yeah.
And there's many, many songs that I just absolutely love. I've loved for 40 years, 30, 40 years.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for all your creative gifts and all your...
My
your
daughter efforts. Takes credit for putting that webpage together.
It's a real nice page.
Thank you.
And don't forget to tell your daughter she missed one. That record, White Lies, Blue Eyes by Bullet.
Remember that one?
You know that one too?
Sure.
Well, Charlie arranged that record, and it was I don't have my book in front of me, but I think it was definitely like in the top 50 or top 60.
That was 68, 69, right around there.
On the Big Tree label, but that's one your daughter's gonna have to put up on that website.
That was popular in Milwaukee.
You know something? I got to write that down. And while I have you on the phone, I'm going to write down the artist, and I'll find it in my list.
I'll play it for you tonight.
Okay. Let me have the artist.
It's Bullet. B-U-L-L-I-T. I think they spelt it, but it might be E-T. Bullet, and it's White Lies, Blue Eyes on the Big Tree label. And Albo, if you've got a book there, maybe you can look it up. Bullet. What number did that hit on the top 100?
I recall the record. It was popular.
I have the book. I'll look while you guys are
okay.
talking.
Well, yeah, I just did want to mention that we just saw Luke Christie in concert here in Milwaukee on a doo-wop show, and we were amazed with he still has that voice. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, Lou was able to sing for a long time because he sang correctly. He never really strained himself with the falsetto, unlike the way Frankie sang. Frankie's voice was a little bit different, I didn't think that Frankie was going to be able to continue to hit those high notes all his life.
And by the way, let me just interject real quick that a listener in our chat room, we have a whole bunch of listeners who are tuned into the show tonight, and they're in the Relics of Rarities chat room tonight, and they're indicating, which I'm sort of surprised by this, but they're saying that in early 72, that Bullet record on the Billboard charts peaked at number 28. That's a lot higher than I remembered it, to be honest with you. But that definitely needs to get on that website. And by the way, the website, for those of you listening to the show tonight, who would like to look at Charlie's website as we're talking to him, Charlie, if you could just, is it www.charlescolello.com? What is the website address?
That's it.
Is that right?
That's it.
It's www.charlescalello.com. charlescalello.com.
I would recommend that people click on the discography link.
Listen, we're not going to hire you as a disc jockey at that rate.
Here it is. It got up to 28.
Okay.
Well, you see that? So you could put a footnote on there somewhere. Thanks to Dave the Rave's Relics and Rarity Show.
Even though I don't remember what the song sounds like.
We'll play it for you.
Tell me I did it. Once I hear
white
it, I can...
lies in her blue eyes, evil's the game she played. It goes like that, I believe.
Charlie, are you looking for a new singer, maybe?
No, thank you. I have enough new singers.
Yeah, a very pretty one I hear, too. Yeah, we'll get to that. Albo, get up. I'm sorry, we've been interrupting you. So, okay, so you love the records. It's been the soundtrack of your life. And what's the big question for Charlie?
Well, I have a number of them.
Oh, well.
They're smaller questions.
Okay, go ahead.
But I recall on television, on Candid Camera, there was a segment with the Four Seasons back in about 64, 65. I'm wondering if you participated in that.
Oh, I don't think so.
No?
No.
All right. I recall they were a part of one of the segments on Candid Camera.
Well, he might not have been, you know, with the Four Seasons, you know, as a performer at that point in time. He might have been just working in the studio.
65.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure. It was around that time. Not sure.
Good question, though.
Don't Think Twice by The Wonder Who. Do you know why they changed their name for that record? What was the purpose of changing the name?
We were doing a Burt Bacharach Bob Dylan records. I mean, for whatever reason, I don't know. Those two artists, two writers, really didn't have anything in common. But we were doing a record. In fact, it's for the people that are Four Seasons fans, they know the record. And one of the songs that we did was the Bob Dylan song "Don't Think Twice." And Frankie went out on the mic when it was his turn to sing the vocal. And he started to fool around and sing it like Red Murphy. And Bob Crew heard it. That's sensational. And Frankie did a performance on it. And we thought that the record was so camp that Crew wanted to release it, but because it didn't sound like a Four Seasons record, he just wanted to put it out. So he put it out as The Wonder Who. Like, you know, who is this? You know, as if people couldn't tell. But that was really the
and of course there was actually
no, we didn't go into the studio to cut the record. It was just something that Frankie did on the mic.
Okay. Two of my favorite songs you all were also involved in, Clean Apart.
Ah, it was your student record.
And I bought that 45. And Abigail Beecher by Freddie Cannon.
Yeah,
my favorite record
ever.
Oh, I love that record.
That was that was the first non-Four Season hit I had as an arranger.
You mean even before, I guess that predated, I guess, the Name Game, and
right.
And of course, there you were the producer.
Right, Vinnie Bell, when he went on a session, he said, you know, he says, in order for us to play this correctly, we have to retune guitars. So the way they tuned the guitars on that record was I think they had to tune the guitars differently so that they could play the part. But when I wrote the part out, they were scuffling with that dun jigga dun jigga dun dun dun. And I think they did something. It was a fun record to make. In the days when we used to cut everything live.
That's just an absolutely great record.
Thank you.
Good Morning Starshine. Now, I'm surprised you have that record listed as only making number 27. That was a huge hit in Milwaukee around the Midwest.
Well, it was on a Billboard chart. It was only 27. What happened with that song was I originally did the record for Eddie Germano, who
Eddie Hazelton.
Eddie owned the Hit Factory in New York.
But wasn't the record on the wasn't Eddie's name that he put out on the record Eddie Hazelton?
Yeah. When we did the record, Bob really believed in the song, and we made the record, and finished it. We recorded everything. I'm trying to look for the
book. I have the record here. I think the original was the Eddie Hazelton record that you were involved with.
Yeah, but what happened was he used the same track. And although the record doesn't credit me as the arranger, I did the record.
Okay, I believe you. I mean, because I actually was going to ask you about that.
Several records like that. For example, hold on. I'm not listed as the arranger on All By Myself, and I did All By Myself, the Eric Carmen record.
How did that come to be that they omitted your name?
Eric took credit.
And how did that sit with you? Was this prearranged or?
It was. Well, I was writing arrangements for him, and he had sold a deal to Clive Davis that he was the arranger. So I knew his manager, and his manager asked me if I would do him a favor and do the record. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to get credit. From the record. Hold on, I'm looking. Good Morning Starshine got up to be number 3.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that was 27. Was a little low.
I guess that's just a typo. We'll have to get Charlie's daughter to add bullet and to correct the number on the Oliver song.
That was just a massive record around because we used to listen to WLS out of Chicago and WCSL, and it was played all the time.
Let me just go back to Eric Carmen. I'm intrigued by this. So the manager wanted you to arrange this song for Eric Carmen. He was trying to get a record deal with Arista, Clive Davis.
And then after the record was made, he called me up and said, it would be important for Eric to be listed as the arranger. And at that point, once you're hired to write the arrangements, you really don't have any control over what they do. So, when the record came out and they added his name, it wasn't something I was really, really happy with. But it was nothing that.
I mean, they paid you for the record. They just left your name out of it.
Yeah, but if you look at the union contract, I mean, you see, I got paid for the arrangement. I conducted the arrangement.
Yeah, no, I believe. I don't think you'd come on and tell us something that wasn't there.
I'm credited in the history books for doing.
Yeah.
I can't take my eyes off you, and I didn't do that, so I don't have a problem telling.
Oh,
you.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Who did that?
I was working for Columbia Records, and Artie Schreck wrote the arrangement. He was a kid I went to high school with, and I got him started as an arranger.
I have something coming up with Artie Schreck tonight, too, if we have time. In fact, I'll mention it right now, just real quick, because sometimes it's easy to not get back to something because time can go so quick, and you've got so many records. It'd be like, bringing on Ernie Banks or Mickey Mantle and asking them to talk about all their great games. It would take forever. But I recently, strange as you would bring up his name, I recently this week received a letter from somebody in the Netherlands who, represented a group of people who listened to my show, Relics and Rarities. And they made a comment. I played Lovin' Things by Bobby Rydell. And the letter came to me and said, basically, gee, we never heard the Bobby Rydell version. We always thought that, and we're trying to figure out when that version came out, because we always thought that the original version of Love and Things was by a group called December's Children. And I wrote back to them, and I said, well, in reality, I said the original version came out in late 66, early 67. It was on the Columbia label, and it was the version done by the writer, Artie Schreck.
Right.
And I didn't mention in the letter to them, but of course I can mention to everybody here on the radio tonight, that you, Charlie Colalo, was the producer, I believe, on that record.
Right. I went to high school with Artie, and Artie was instrumental in...
was that Newark High School?
That Arts High School, yeah.
In Newark, New Jersey?
He was always a brilliant musician and very talented. In fact, he and I just split the arrangements on a new Frankie Valli CD.
That is already out or coming out?
It's in the works. I did 8 arrangements, he did 7.
Well, I hope you...
on Universal.
I hope you send us a copy so we can play it.
He did a 60s record, and I can't tell you what the song titles are because they're holding that pretty close to the vest. But we did a 60s record, and these are all songs that Frankie did not record, and some of them are really, really fabulous. Well, the cuts are really, really great.
Well, listen, when it comes out, you can tell Frankie had a great time. Maybe you can get Frankie to come on for a shorter interview to debut the new record. I mean, well, to at least promote the new CD.
Well,
keep us in mind.
Okay, I will.
I know we've... Albo, are you still there?
Yes, I am, Dave.
Okay.
Any more questions?
Yeah.
Another question. One of my favorite songs, another great song, is Lover's Concerto by The Toys.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've always looked for that in stereo. Is there any idea that that would ever come out in stereo? And while we're speaking about stereo, since the advent of stereo, did you have to change the way you arrange the songs? Was there any effect on you going from mono to stereo?
No, it only affected the way we mixed the records.
Okay.
It had nothing to do with the way we arranged. In fact, arrangers don't really think about about the sound, because arrangers really arrange for the room, about what it's going to sound like in the room, and usually the engineers wind up putting it together, and they would do that. I mean, today I'm a lot more involved, but back then we left it all up to the engineers.
Well, let's talk about it, and then we're gonna say goodbye to Alba. But please do talk about Lover's Concerto, because that's just a great arrangement.
Well, I'll tell you one of the things about it. I stole the intro from Stop in the Name of Love. It goes ba-dum, bum ba-dum, bum bum ba-dum, bum bum. Then it goes boom dum 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 dee dum 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 dum. That's Stop in the Name of Love. I didn't know I did it at the time. I lifted it right off. It was exactly Stop in the Name of Love.
Did Motown, Jobette Publishing ever, you know, take suit against you? Or?
A lick. It wasn't part of the song. So, you know, then the writers didn't do it. It was me, you know, as the arranger. One of the cool parts about it was that little instrumental part where it plays the thing sort of like a pop fugue. I thought that was pretty cool. In fact, in 1965, Frankie and I were in Rome, and we ran into the Beatles, and we spent some time with them. In fact, I have some home movies of Frankie and I with the Beatles, which is really cool.
I'll be over tomorrow for brunch.
My kids discovered them. I had forgotten I had it. They said, "Dad, do you know you have pictures of you with the Beatles?" I said, "Oh, yeah." I said, "I think I remember that." Then eventually my daughter transferred it to DVD, so I now have it on DVD.
Anything memorable?
What they were telling me about was Paul McCartney mentioned that they had just recorded this song that they were really, really happy with called Yesterday, which they felt was like a little classical kind of a song. So I told him, I said, "It's funny, I just made a record that was written on the Bach theme." And although I didn't have a copy of the record, they were impressed over the fact that I was able to take a song that was written by Bach and make it into a pop record. So they said that they would listen to, you know, they would look out for it when it came out. Interestingly, Lovers Concerto knocked Yesterday out of number one.
I guess they didn't have a hard time finding it then.
Oh,
that's the record that Charlie was talking about.
Right.
It was a great record. And I got to tell you, I don't know if you're in touch, if you've seen her lately, but Barbara Harris, I mean, she sounds incredible today. Have you seen her lately or talked with her?
In fact, those singers from back then, I only met them casually. It wasn't even that we worked with them a lot. I don't think that they worked on more than two or three sessions for us. So I never really got to know them really well.
Well, Barbara Harris, who's really the only member of the Toys that I've gotten a chance to know, and she today sounds better or as good as she did back then. Just incredible singer.
Right.
So I'm glad you brought that song up, Alba, because it's a great song, and of course it was a great big success for Charlie. And Alba, I want to thank you for your phone call.
Dave, thank you. Charlie, it's been an honor and a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you.
And I just want to say thank you for all the music and for all that's yet to come.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Take care. Of course, is the Lover's Concerto, number one record. The Toys. My guest, of course, is the gentleman who arranged that record, Charlie Colalo. And Charlie will be with me until about 1 o'clock this morning. So those of you who want to call, and I know we're getting a lot of phone calls, you got to make your calls quick because, Charlie, you got a big golf day tomorrow, don't you?
Actually, not really.
I mean, these people will ask you a lot of questions. You have a lot of great records here, Charlie. And I've got a gentleman here on the phone line. I think, is it Jim you said?
Yeah, Jim from West Virginia.
Jim from West Virginia. Just speak up as loud as you can, and please say hello to Charlie.
Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Jim.
I had a question for you. In the mid-80s, one of my favorite TV shows was Crime Story, and you were listed among the credits for the musical.
Right, project. Al Cooper and I
was wondering
did that.
What you did, and do you have any recollections of that show?
Any recollection? Well, we did it for 2 years, and there were thousands of hours we spent in recording studio doing it. There's a lot of stuff that I remember about it.
You did it together with Al Cooper?
Yeah. Jim, it's real hard to hear you.
That's me talking, but yeah, I know it is hard to hear. We have a bad connection there with Jim, but you know, he just wanted you to give him your recollections of Crime Story and you know, what you remember about it. So one thing you've told me is that you did it with Al Cooper.
Al Cooper was a lot of fun to work with. I started to work with Al in the '60s when he was on staff at Columbia Records, and Al and I are still friends today. The last project we did together was we did the Ray Charles 50 Years in Show Business television show, and Al and I still talk. And
well, doesn't Al live in Florida near you? Doesn't he?
Al lives in Massachusetts.
Okay.
He taught at Berkeley for a while, but then he lost. He's been losing his sight because he's got sugar.
Sorry to hear that.
But he is still. Talented
as ever. Well, he just played two nights last weekend, I think it was. He played at a place called the Turning Point. It's a club. I'm not sure what musicians he had with him, but he either played like Friday and Saturday or Saturday and Sunday, and so he's still out there playing.
Well, he works with the guys who do the Conan show.
Okay. You're talking about the some of the guys from the Max Weinberg Seven.
I think minus Max Weinberg. I think they use another drummer.
Okay, Jimmy Vivino and Mark Pender and Richie Rosenberg.
Jimmy Vivino has been working with him. He's like the new Charlie Colella for Al Cooper.
Okay. Well, those guys are friendly. I'm friends with all those guys from the Max Weinberg Seven.
Yeah.
Some of them are clients of mine, actually. I'll have to ask him about that.
Yeah, well, Jimmy knows Al pretty well. He could have been playing with him.
Okay. That's probably what it was then. I'm guessing that would make sense. It's definitely geographically in the area that they could have been playing together.
Jim, you still on the line?
Jim, are you still there?
Yes, I am, Dave.
Did you have a follow-up question regarding Crime Story?
No, I'll tell you one thing really that happened. I really enjoyed the show, the music. I thought it was really a great production all the way through.
I'll tell you one thing that happened. Al got called to the gig, and he had never scored or anything, so he didn't know how to do it. Every time Al got called to do something that he didn't know how to do, he would call me. And the only reason why I got called to do Crime Story was because I knew how to score for film, and Al did it. But one of the things that was really funny about working with Al is the shoot-from-the-hip kind of guy. Whatever he feels about something, he does. And it was really, really a lot of fun because I would do cues for the show, and he would overdub the guitar. So a lot of times I never heard what he played until I heard it on the air. And there were a lot of times I'd listen to it and I'd say, Al, that's really great. What'd you do?
That's a good story.
But one of the things about doing television is they didn't want it good. They wanted it by 9 o'clock.
Okay. Jim is a great question. Jim from what part of West Virginia are you in?
Shenandoah Junction. It's near Harper's Ferry.
Okay, well, from Shenandoah Junction to the No Static Attic, we thank you for calling, Jim.
Okay. Thank you, Dave.
All right. Charlie Colella, once again, is my guest, 732 area code 866-4475. You guys and girls, and got about 15 more minutes to call. Of course, I know we still got Joe on hold. I got to get Joe on the phone line. But I want to quickly throw in a record here. I'll play it for you. I'm guessing you don't remember this one. It's by Vic Thomas.